Chapter 29, Let's Talk Turkey by Willie Snow Etheridge. 29. 1 in 19 million. On the third morning after sailing from Izmit, we wake to find ourselves in Turkey's southernmost port, İskenderun, much better known to the Western world as Alexandretta. Even I had heard of it by that name, though faintly. But not only is it as far south as one can get in Turkey, it is as far east as one can land in the Mediterranean. It clings to the shore where the green-blue Gulf of İskenderun bites deepest into Turkey, which is mountainous and rocky here. From the middle of the harbor, I found the town exceedingly picturesque, but the roommate couldn't see the land for the 14 ships lying off and the three already tied up at the dock. How long they had been waiting to be unloaded, the roommate didn't know, but he feared the worst. We hung about the Moline all morning to see if there would be any gesture toward unloading us. Then, convinced that nothing was going to happen until tomorrow, quote-unquote tomorrow, took a launch to town. We tried to get Mr. Big to accompany us, but he preferred swimming with the Chinese members of the crew. As we stopped at the customs control office to get permission to go ashore, we were pounced upon by a giant of a man in a loud pink shirt and brown trousers with fair complexion, a big beaked nose and eyes as round and blue as agate marbles. "Ah, Mr. Mark," he cried, having evidently mastered the roommate's given name rather than his family one. "I'm just now looking for you. I'm Saladin Bey of Sokoni Vakum. Mr. Dingy has written me about you and your madam." And with no more to do, he took us under his all-enveloping wing and kept us there during our entire stay in İskenderun. "What is your desire?" he asked. "It is only yours to say." "I must first go to the office of the shipping agent," said the roommate. "Money, you know." "Certainly, we will pass there." There were two important-looking individuals at the shipping agent's, Boutros Bey and a Greek, Mr. Vasiliades. They welcomed me as if I were Margaret Truman. Boutros Bey presented me with an enormous, tightly tied bunch of all the flowers that could grow in İskenderun in August, golden glow, purple, yellow, and cerise zinnias, red cannas, lavender dahlias, and pale pink roses. "From my garden," said Boutros Bey, waving his hand airily. Next, Mr. Vasiliades presented me with a hubbly-bubbly pipe. Saladin Bey was delighted. "Now you sit on your feet like the Turks," he cried, sitting down in a straight chair and swiftly pulling up his feet and crossing them beneath him, "and you suck grubbly, grubbly, grubbly." He held an imaginary stem of an imaginary coil leading from an imaginary water cooler on the floor, for I was still holding the hubbly-bubbly close to my heart, and grubblied away joyously. Never had I seen a man have so much fun, so innocently, that is. He was loath to end it. Evidently, he himself had never known until this instant what an artist he was at slurping. But finally he did stop to rock with elated laughter and to announce, "Mrs. Mark, no doubt you will become a hubbly-bubbly addict. Who knows? Who knows?" The roommate watched the performance, smiling but slightly uneasy. He wasn't accustomed to such carrying ons in the office of busy executives, except when John Welburn Brown came to sell him insurance in Louisville. "We must go now," he said, addressing Boutros Bey and Mr. Vasiliades, and forgetting completely about the money for which he had come. "We've already taken up too much of your valuable time." "Not at all," Mr. Vasiliades contradicted. "We will have coffee." And so we had coffee, and then, in spite of polite protest, departed with Saladin Bey. "Now, what do you like, Mr. Mark?" "We have some shopping to do," I put in. "We want to buy some stationery and other things." "Good, we will find." Riding between high garden walls topped with bougainvillea and palms, the roommate was reminded of St. Augustine. But the people in the street weren't dressed like Floridians. Most of the men wore those full-bottom pantaloons that droop in folds between the legs to catch Mohammed, so they say, when he is born of man the next time, but fit snug as putties around the calves. They are comfortable for work, Saladin Bey explained. A plenty of room for squatting and sitting cross-legged on the fields. One old gentleman with wide sweeping beard, attired in cream-colored woolen sagging pants, vest, and long swallowtail coat, hurried across the road just in front of us, and Saladin Bey called gaily, "Take it easy, feller. We won't do anything but crush you." Some women were enveloped in loose, flowing black garbs with scarves about their heads, others in Western clothes, and one, in spite of the warmth of the air, in dark red velvet with a pink silk handkerchief around her hair. "Phew!" exclaimed Saladin Bey. "Many different kinds of people here, many different sects. How many? Who knows? Who knows? Arab Muslims, Turk Muslims, Armenians, Arab Christians, Turk Christians, Greek Orthodox." "Maronites?" suggested the roommate, though who Maronites were I had not the slightest idea, nor evidently did Saladin Bey, for he shrugged and answered, "Almost." We stopped at a store with its showcases parallel to the street. Like a drugstore at home, it had everything. Stationery, toothpaste, Gillette razor blades. "Now, I'd like to get a bottle of vodka," the roommate said. "The very best. I want to take a present to the captain." "All whiskey is the best," Saladin Bey answered. Thinking this was meant to be amusing, we laughed appreciatively, but Saladin Bey corrected us. "I mean, in Turkey, there is only one kind. Whiskey is a government monopoly." The vodka purchased, we sauntered across the street to a bookstore. In the window was a Turkish translation of Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. "Ah," Saladin Bey exclaimed excitedly, "I bought a copy of this book for my son, and every evening I make him read it." "Does he enjoy it?" asked the roommate. "Ah, he is only 12 and not yet concerned with such things. He learns with one ear and forgets with the other." Children followed us along the street, staring at us with big black eyes. Syrians, Lebanese, Greeks, Armenians, Turks, and even French are everyday sights, but Americans are rarities. Our shopping behind us, we next drove to Saladin Bey's house on the property of the Soconi Vacuums installation. It is a high-ceiling house of many windows, tile floors, and sparse, stiff furniture. The sea is at the front door, the rock-ribbed mountains at the back. "The mountains are much too close to Iskenderun," Saladin Bey explained. "The rocks suck up the sun all day, and at night they radiate it out." The moment we sat down, we were offered coffee, but hemming and hawing, we asked for water instead. "Cool, clear water," said the roommate. Never were words more enthusiastically received. Saladin Bey all but embraced us. "Assuredly, Mr. Mark, assuredly, the water here is excellent." He clasped his hands together and rolled his round blue eyes towards the ceiling. "It is the best. It comes from a spring in the mountains. Not even in Kentucky do we carry on so about bourbon." But with the water came chocolates and biscuits. Munching them, I felt I must be personal and asked Saladin Bey his nationality. I thought he was of Greek origin. He was so exuberant and gay. But he answered proudly, "I am Turkish, and I'm afraid my mouth dropped open. Certainly neither dour nor somber-minded nor heavy nor any of the other adjectives I had been using to describe Turks fitted this man. My trouble, I could see in a flash, was that I hadn't been meeting the right people. I'd have to start over in Turkey, but on second thought, perhaps not immediately. Maybe it would be better first to return home with the roommate, Mr. Big, and stay for a little while." "Where in Turkey were you born?" "You see, I plan to start right there next time. I was born in Izmir, old Smyrna, you know. Have you been there?" "No," I confessed. "It is a pity. It is very lovely, and there is much there of interest to see. And just now they have found the grave of Mary." "Mary who?" I asked in all innocence. "Mary, the mother of Christ. Are you sure? I thought the Pope decreed she didn't die but ascended like Christ into heaven. It is impossible, he answered flatly. I'm a Muslim, but I don't believe even Muhammad ascended into heaven. He was a human being in his life, wasn't he? Then he died like a human being. And so were Mary and Christ human beings, and so they died like human beings. Where did you learn to speak such fluent English? Asked the roommate quickly, in no mood for a religious argument. I'm a graduate of Robert College in Istanbul. Before we could compare notes on our mutual Robert acquaintances, a very pretty, curvaceous young woman dressed in light blue linen came into the room. My wife, announced Saladin Bey. It is our 15th wedding anniversary. Today, I cried, smelling a party. No, soon, and still she does not speak English. When we met, I told her I would teach her English, but instead I taught her the love language, he chuckled elatedly. And then we got mixed up with children. More and louder chuckles. So 15 years go by, and she does not learn English. Custard with caramel sauce arrived, a specialty of my wife. It was impossible for Saladin Bey to hide the pleasure in his voice. The roommate took a bit and smacked his lips. Choke gazelle, he murmured, or sounds to that effect. Ah, you speak Turkish, Saladin Bey cried. A little, agreed the roommate, shrugging his shoulders and blushing with modesty. A becoming modesty, I might add, as this, or the correct Turkish of this, was his total knowledge of the language. Three guests arrived, a man and two women. They were Turks and exceptionally good-looking and well-dressed. The man held a master's degree in engineering, having studied at McGill in Canada and Columbia in New York. Recently, in disgust, he had given up a desk job with the Turkish government to be an engineer in a nearby coal mine. An expert in floating, which I gather was some phase of mining and not to be confused with swimming, he was put, while with the government, to translating English books into Turkish. He felt this was too great a waste of his talent, and so he resigned. His experience was typical, he declared. Old-fashioned bosses at Ankara smother the ambitions and capabilities of the educated young. Saladin Bey couldn't have agreed with him more and said so. The top officials in Turkey are much too old and set in their ways. Though the government and the customs of Turkey have been westernized by Ataturk, the government offices are still manned by Eastern-thinking minds. These old fogies, he cried warmly, should be gathered together in one place and have an atom bomb dropped on them. Turkey has plenty of young, competent men, but they will never get a chance to serve their country until the moss backs are out of the way. More plates of custard and caramel sauce and, of course, glasses of water. And so the afternoon passed away. And so, if you must know, did I. Custard-eyed, as it were, and 3 feet underwater. End of chapter 29.